Let us take a closer look at the kind of criterion market prices provide. The distinction we have drawn between scientific method and alchemy will come in useful. I have argued that in the study of social phenomena, we need to distinguish between two kinds of validity, one associated with truth, the other with effectiveness. In natural science, the distinction is missing. Theories are effective only if they are true. That is why alchemy does not work. Following this line of thought, we can argue that the market price provides a criterion of effectiveness, but not a criterion of truth. Future market prices will determine how the various participants fare, but they will not determine whether their understanding is correct. Only if market prices tend towards an equilibrium would the two criteria merge. The market price would then be the correct price. We can see now how important the concept of equilibrium is. It serves as a bridge between natural and social science and eliminates the disturbing dichotomy between truth and effectiveness that characterizes the study of social phenomena. Unfortunately, the bridge does not stand up because imperfect understanding renders the concept of equilibrium inappropriate. Without an innate tendency towards equilibrium, the course of events cannot be determined by scientific method, but it can be shaped by the methods of alchemy. The attempt to transpose the methods and criteria of natural science to the social sphere is unsustainable. It gives rise to inflated expectations that cannot be fulfilled. These expectations go far beyond the immediate issue of scientific knowledge and color our entire way of thinking. The belief that economic policy ought to aim at the optimum allocation of resources has dominated political thought and political action since the middle of the 19th century. Those on the left wanted the state to take charge of the allocation. Those on the right wanted to leave it to the market mechanism. Under the influence of Marxism, the pursuit of the optimum led to the total abandonment of the market mechanism in large parts of the world. Even in market-oriented economies, the state was given a large role in correcting the imperfections of the market mechanism. Gradually, the harmful side effects of state intervention have become increasingly evident, and the prevailing bias has swung back in favor of free markets. We are quite willing to recognize the fallacy in Marxism, but we are much less inclined to admit that the theory of perfect competition is imbued with a similar fallacy. Both are built on the assumption of perfect knowledge. In one case, the assumption produces market equilibrium. In the other, it finds expression in an unconditional prediction of the course of history. It is worth pointing out that both theories originated in the 19th century, when the limitations of knowledge were not yet recognized and science reigned supreme. Once we recognize that the optimum is unattainable, we are in a better position to evaluate the merits and shortcomings of the market mechanism. I do not want to get involved in the problems connected with the distribution of wealth, not because I do not consider them important, but only because my analysis has little to contribute to the subject. I want to focus on one particular weakness of the market mechanism, its innate instability. Its cause has been identified. It derives from the two-way connection between thinking and reality that I have labeled reflexivity. It is not in operation in all markets at all times, but if and when it occurs, there is no limit to how far away both perceptions and events can move from anything that could be considered equilibrium. Instability is not necessarily harmful. Indeed, if it were described as dynamic adjustment, it would sound positively benign. But carried to extremes, it can give rise to sudden reversals that may take on catastrophic proportions. That is particularly the case where credit is involved, because the liquidation of collateral can lead to sudden compression of market prices. The prevention of excessive instability is therefore a necessary condition for the smooth functioning of the market mechanism. It is not a condition that the market mechanism can ensure on its own. On the contrary, I have presented evidence that unregulated financial markets tend to become progressively more unstable. The evidence is most clear-cut in the currency markets, but it is also quite persuasive with regard to the expansion and contraction of credit. Whether stock markets would prove inherently unstable if there were no credit involved remains an open question, because stock market booms are always associated with credit expansion. Excessive instability can be prevented only by some sort of regulation. How much instability is excessive is a matter of judgment. Standards vary with time. The degree of dislocation we are willing to tolerate today, as measured by unemployment figures, would have seemed inconceivable a few decades ago when the memories of the Great Depression were still fresh and the drawbacks of full employment policies less evident. Similarly, the restrictions on corporate restructuring have been greatly relaxed between the conglomerate boom of the 1960s and the merger mania of the 1980s. The trouble with regulation is that the regulators are also human and apt to err. In order to avoid arbitrary behavior and abuse of power, rules and regulations need to be fixed in advance, and it is difficult to devise regulations that are flexible enough to meet all contingencies. Regulations tend to be rigid and to hinder innovation. The rigidities and distortions they introduce tend to be just as cumulative as the instability of an unregulated market. Income taxes provide a good example. The steeper the rates and the longer they stay in effect, the more widespread the tax avoidance and the more complex the tax code. I do not want to keep the discussion at such a high level of generality much longer, because it can easily deteriorate into empty phrases. I shall try to make some policy suggestions in the next chapter. Here, I want to make only one general point. Both regulation and unrestrained competition can be harmful when carried to extremes. But the failure of one extreme is no justification for turning to the other. The two extremes should be treated not as alternatives, but as limits within which the right balance needs to be struck. The task is complicated by our innate tendency to be biased in one direction or the other. In The Burden of Consciousness, written some 25 years ago, I developed a rather elaborate scheme along these lines. I took the rate of change as my critical variable, and I argued that people, with their imperfect understanding, are bound to exaggerate it in one direction or the other. One extreme yields a traditional or a dogmatic mode of thinking, according to which the existing arrangements have to be accepted as they are because it is inconceivable that they should be otherwise. The other extreme produces a critical mode of thinking in which everything is considered possible until disproved. Each mode of thinking is linked with a form of social organization which corresponds to it with the degree of imperfection that is appropriate to the imperfect understanding of the participants. In this way, the traditional mode of thinking is associated with tribal society, the dogmatic mode with totalitarian society, and the critical mode with open society. Needless to say, I was very much under the influence of Karl Popper. I opted for open society, but the choice was not without qualification. Each form of social organization was found wanting in something that could be found only in its opposite. Totalitarian society lacked freedom, open society lacked stability. But given our innate bias, a stable equilibrium between the two is just as unlikely to be attained as a stable equilibrium in a free market. Sentiment is likely to swing in one direction or the other. After nearly half a century of what now appears as excessive regulation, we have been moving towards excessive deregulation. The sooner we recognize that some kind of regulation is necessary in order to maintain stability, the better our chances of preserving the benefits of a nearly free market system.